Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. When I was a child, I loved magic shows. I still do, for that matter. But when I was in my teens, I realized that people often enjoyed magic for two quite different reasons. One group loved magic shows because they were, well, magical. They hinted at supernatural powers that might exist within and around all of us. Those in the second group loved to figure out how the magic was created. They referred to themselves as more analytical or even more intelligent. Meanwhile, those who loved the magical element considered those people spoil sports and party poopers. As I grew older, I realized that these same two orientations permeate the daily lives of most of us to one degree or another. For example, I consider all but the most idiot simple mechanical devices in my life magical. And if magical power resided in some state comparable to Dante's Nine Rings in Hell, all electronic devices in my house would dwell in the ninth ring of magicalness. In both cases, though, how magical I think any device is rests solely on its ability to do what I expect it to do. Wash my clothes, bake my enchiladas, pump water into my house, mow my lawn, transport me safely from point A to point B, and accomplish all those magical tasks that require any kind of electronic device. But those are inanimate objects. Matters become trickier when we apply those same orientation to living beings. Periodically, I serve shelter and rescue sites, read their descriptions of available animals, and note the presence and magnitude of any magical marketing that occurs. The more magical the marketing terminology, the more suspicious I become, and the less likely I am to recommend those sites. Tip-offs to magical companion animal marketing include the use of emotionally charged words and little or no concrete information about the animals themselves. Anything that even hints at all you need is love prerequisites or forever homeness causes alarm bells to ring and my blood pressure to rise. But suppose this marketing approach tugs on Jane's heartstrings. She feels convinced the animal depicted in the photo is her spirit dog. He's the dog for her. She can see it in his eyes. She feels so strongly about this that she has no need or desire to know anything else about him. Her name is Jane, and she is a magical animal thinker. However, the magical animal thinking orientation also comes with a rarely acknowledged add-on. All magical animal thinkers automatically become gamblers, sometimes in a 24/7, 365 rigged game. Because Jane perceives her love as all her dog needs, she's gambling that love either will protect him from all physical and behavioral problems or magically cure him should they occur. But even if Jane beats the odds and the dog remains problem-free his entire life with her, she cannot offer him a forever home, no matter how hard she tries. Nobody can. He will die, and most likely die before she does. And when he does, Jane will feel like part of herself has died too. People who take a more mindful, less emotional approach to their animals also may suffer when their animals die. But before we get into that, let's return to our discussion of human orientations as these apply to inanimate objects. Like me, if one of the mechanical or electronic devices Jane considers magical fails, she knows she can find someone to fix it. Ideally, the chore-specific magician will fix the problem, and all she must do is pay the bill. But sometimes the magician, aka the plumber, computer, or other wizard, also will tell her what she needs to do to keep the problem from happening again, and even how to fix the problem herself. Because she's paying for this information as well as any repair, and her budget is limited, she pays attention. She takes notes or mentally repeats the preventive process to fix it in her brain. If a magician isn't available, then Jane either can do without it or try to diagnose and fix the problem herself. But when she invests the time and energy to find out how something works, her relationship with it changes. Perhaps this sounds strange to magical thinking purists, but she gains respect for how the device is put together and how it does what it does. Even if she fails to fix the problem and calls the magician for help, her relationship with the object changes. The high points occur when she discovers that something she thought was so complicated turns out to be simple once she understands how it works and has the proper tools to correct the problem. Or maybe she downloads and actually reads the owner's manual that came with the broken device. Another anathema to brains in magical thinking mode. But even if Jane realizes that the malfunctioning device requires knowledge and skills she lacks, and furthermore, chooses not to game, her relationship with the object tilts even more in the mindful thinking direction. Mindful animal thinkers take a similar approach to the animals in their lives. They love their animals for their animalness, as well as how the animals enrich their own lives. They love their cats for their catness and their dogs for their dogness. They know their own and their animals' limits. And for sure they suffer as much, and sometimes more, when their animals die. This occurs because the more we know about what makes an individual, animal, or group so special, the more connections we can recognize in our shared and separate worlds. For example, Dick marvels at the physical and behavioral ways he and his cat are similar and how they differ. When he chooses to summon the wherewithal to help his cat through medical and behavioral problems, he gains an appreciation of the magnitude and power of the mutually rewarding bond the two of them have formed and reinforced over the years. If anything, that bond is even more magical because he understands how its components work together to ensure a quality life for the two of them. By now you might be thinking that, for you, this isn't an either-or proposition. Sometimes you engage in magical thinking. You dance with your dog or confide things to your cat you wouldn't share with your best friend. Other times, such as when some sort of animal-related problem arises, you replace the magical view with a more objective and down-to-earth mindful view of reality. Once the problem is resolved, you might return to your magical world to celebrate. Or you might discover that, once you let go of the magic and discover how your new knowledge and skills enable you and your animal to create a richer life in the here and now together, this is where you want to spend the bulk of your time. As always, the key is balance. You don't want to deny animal problems when they exist and retreat into magical thinking instead. nor do you want to take a purely analytical approach to your own or other animals because you're afraid of your own emotions.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.